Good morning. I'm Todd Moore, and just as I expected, 9 o'clock in the morning, not many people's here yet. I guess they're all stuck in that great Pittsburgh traffic, huh? Yeah. So just want to take a few minutes here to introduce myself and introduce CONSOL Energy and to talk about the project that we partnered with Komatsu to develop. Like I say, my name's Todd Moore, and I'm here today to share the results of this cooperative venture between the two of us. We've developed a personal proximity system for use on automated longwall faces. First thing I want to do before I really get started is thank everyone at Komatsu that's helped to make this happen. They certainly grabbed the ball and ran with it and have developed a system that I have great confidence that will protect our guys. So thanks for all that you've done, you guys. In the safety arena, sometimes it's very difficult for manufacturers and developers to see the need for a safety system like this. You know, it's hard to justify what they do. And in this case, Komatsu did see the need, and like I say, they responded with a system that I believe is exactly what the industry needs at this time. That will absolutely, in my opinion, it'll help to prevent what we're focusing on, and that is life-altering events between humans and shields. CONSOL Energy and Komatsu received the NIOSH Award in 2018 for the development of this proximity system and was recognized in D.C. Last year one day. Before I turn the presentation over here to the group that really developed it, to Craig and Paul, I want to talk a little bit about CONSOL Energy. Probably some people here don't know CONSOL as we are today. I'm the manager of safety for CONSOL Energy. I've been with CONSOL 39 years already. Doesn't seem possible, but they've sure went by fast. In these 39 years, I've certainly seen lots of changes and major changes when it comes to longwall mining and automation. Our company is a company that has been around since 1860. And that's not a typo, that's correct. 1860, we developed. CONSOL began developing, and in 1864 they started mining coal. And today's CONSOL, we have around 1,700 employees and 250 plus contractors that work for us. We help generate the fuel that accounts for nearly one third of the nation's power. Now, the people down in the hall here, they ought to understand that we're still in the electric business, okay? So we still account for about a third of the electricity in the country. In late 2017, the company formally split into two publicly traded companies, CNX Resources and CONSOL Energy. The CONSOL Energy of today holds some of the best coal assets in the world and is positioned for the future with the largest underground mining complex in the United States. We have ready access to U.S. markets as well as the seaborne markets via our Baltimore terminal. And we currently possess over 1 billion tons of undeveloped reserves. And I guess this is a picture that just shows the overview of our central preparation plant that's located in southwestern Pennsylvania. It's the largest of its kind in the United States, if not in the world, for underground. This shows where we're located, located here in southwestern Pennsylvania and a little bit of the panhandle of West Virginia. We currently operate the Bailey, the Enlow, and the Harvey mines, and we have plans to open a new mine in Wyoming County, West Virginia, here the end of this year, sometime next year. At CONSOL, we operate three longwall coal mines in the Pittsburgh coal seam with one centralized processing plant. In these three mines, we operate five longwalls, 5 to 6 days per week, and we operate between 15 to 17 continuous miner units for the development of our longwall panels. In 2018, we produced 27.6 million clean tons. Let me first say that I'm a believer in proximity detection. I've been working with various companies for over 10 years to develop, investigate, and test and deploy proximity systems on some of our mining equipment. CONSOL Energy has been and still is a leader for proximity detection innovation. Proximity was first developed for installation on place change miners, and there's currently an MSHA regulation requiring that. We at Consol, we don't run any, currently, we don't run any place change miners. That's going to change, but currently we don't have any, and we're not required to run proximity on anything that we have in the coal mine currently by any state or federal regulation. Accidents involving coal haulage has always ranked as one of the top causes of underground fatals in the country. And because of that, we're currently testing proximity today on shuttle cars and ram cars in our mines. And we're looking for more deployment of that as time goes by. During the process of developing and testing prox on our shuttle cars and our ram cars and other pieces of equipment underground, we began exploring the thought of having proximity on our shields. While it's true, you might think, you know, is that really a good use for proximity? When you look at the records I look back to 1983. From there forward, you know, the number one cause of crushing injuries with equipment underground is with a continuous miner, which, like I said, they have laws for that. Then came shuttle cars and ram cars, you know, other pieces of equipment. Shields don't rank in that calculation at all. However, in my history, I'll tell you that any time that we've had an accident involving a shield and a human, it's always resulted in a life-altering kind of incident for those people. You know, not in my lifetime, I've never investigated or involved in a fatal accident involving a shield that was in operation. However, like I say, unfortunately, I've investigated lots of them and been involved in them where they, you know, ended up with a guy with a crushed leg or a crushed pelvis or something that certainly changes his life forever. And that's why we got to discussing that we needed proximity for shields. I wanted to say here, I missed this slide, I guess, so I'm a little bit off, which you all know that if you know me. This slide here, it just represents for Consol where our markets are in North America and throughout the world as we're able to get it out of the Baltimore terminal to go, you know, like I said, to our seaborne ports. Back to talking about the life altering. As longwall faces become more and more automated, which we're all moving toward that day after day, that's where we're all headed. I think the need for proximity on shields will become more and more evident to everyone. Right now, like I say, I think we're the only ones that I know of that are operating proximity in our mines, and we plan to continue to pursue that. So that kind of gives you a background on Consol and a background on how we ended up where we are and why we're there. And with that, I'd like to introduce Craig Dickerson. He's the Assistant Superintendent at Bailey. Craig has been the major driver for prox on longwall shields in our operations. Partially, I think this is due to his real-life experiences surrounding human versus shield incidents. So with that, Craig.
You want that? Good morning. Thank you, Todd. As Todd said, I'm the Assistant Superintendent of Consol Energy's Bailey Mine. Most of my career has been spent with longwalls, from an hourly operator, a face foreman, longwall coordinator, to assistant superintendent at various mines, from Virginia to here in Pennsylvania to northern West Virginia. I've always been concerned in my career, from the time I was an hourly operator, of shield-human collisions. Humans don't win in these situations. Personally, inside my family, I've had two family members have a shield collision. One resulted in a broken pelvis, resulted in a crushing to the abdomen. You know, when you've been involved in this on the family level and then just being on a longwall itself and a shield being near you moving, it makes you realize how unfortunate and how these things happen and we don't need them to happen and what can we do to stop them. Komatsu approached us here at Bailey to assist in developing the personal proximity for the longwall. We was absolutely eager to help and could see the benefits for our people. Shield Prox, this is just another tool that we've added to our crew so that we do get them home back to their families at the end of the day safe. The thought behind the idea was to build a safe zone around each individual as they travel along the face. Komatsu developed the proximity tag for the shields to recognize, and we realize that it is the person. So that we're not controlling it when it's us controlling the shield, but we're controlling during automation. During the development and commissioning, we knew for this system to be successful, we had to hand it to our guys fully tested and functional and ready to go. We did all the testing with mine staff. We didn't use our equipment operators. It was from the longwall coordinators to the maintenance managers to the production foreman and the Komatsu staff to do all the testing and trialing. Because when we handed it off, we wanted it to go off without an issue for any of our people on their first day. We didn't want any negative results out of what the guys thought. The tag that is worn by everyone that either goes to the longwall or has the potential to go to the longwall face, this tag's about the size of a deck of cards. The small size was great for the longwall personnel. It didn't hinder them in any way in doing their job. They wasn't carrying anything that was larger or any bulkier. These tags are handed out at the beginning of the shift just like a methane detector at the same location, so the guys can get their detectors, they get their tags, and they can go to work. By handing them out this way, it allows us to simply visually check and make sure the tags are charged and ready for use. The faceball system detects these tags as they move from the stage loader down the face to the tailgate drive area of the face. This tag is also visible at the headgate control station. It's just a little extra check that we can see that the system is functioning. In addition to the tag, the other hardware pertaining to the system is the onboard shield controller, the RS-20S Mimic. The tag gives off a radio frequency that is received by the Mimic, and the signal strength determines where you're at on the face by plus or minus one shield. Like I said earlier, these tags are battery-powered, rechargeable. It helps the system know where we're at. Once we're underground, it's recommended that we check in as we go down the face, but it's not mandatory for the system to protect us. During production, when we're running a free-running or a shear-initiated shield sequencing, the system is ensuring that there's no operators in the halt zone, and the halt zone being that a two-shield window around you so that the shields around you don't move. There's also a warning zone to let you know of five shields of when you're nearing the shield movement. Like Todd said, we went live with this December 12, 2017, We haven't turned it off since. I think one of the biggest reasons for the success was that we had it ready for our operators when we handed it off. They had a good, positive experience on day one. I now pass the presentation over to Paul Erdman, the Controls and Automation Manager at Americas North for Komatsu.
Thank you, Craig. I'm just going to take you through a little journey of what happens when the operator goes on the shift and collects his tag, goes underground, and some of the operational parts of the system. Firstly, this is the tag. As Craig mentioned, it's compact. We do have some on our stand if you want to come and look at them a little later there. So the first thing is when the operator picks up a tag, they go to a surface station. And the surface station consists of a mimic and a micro and a computer. The mimic and the micro is exactly the same equipment that is fitted to each roof support on the long wall. The PC is there to give you a display. So basically the surface station, what that does is when you walk into a zone, you pick up your tag, you walk into the zone, and the tag picks up, the surface station picks up the tag, and it displays the health of the tag, the battery level, what sort of what version of software is on there, the tag ID, etc., etc. We can change the ID. We can put somebody's name in. We can give it a number. Whatever you want to do, Craig at his mine, they all have numbers. They don't have names, but the tag is intelligent, and therefore, it any information that you enter into the surface station is stored on the tag, and when you get underground, it gets uploaded onto the system automatically. As Craig mentioned, the tag location is accurate to plus or minus one roof support. And that's just to take into account subtle variations in the mimic placement. Generally, we put the mimic in the leg pocket, so in some cases, you may be closer to the mimic if you're stood on the toe of the adjacent shield rather than on the other side of the shield where the mimic's placed. So that's why we talk about plus or minus one shield. Before deploying the PROC system, Komatsu will perform commissioning tests. And what this consists of is an operator or a Komatsu person walking along the face, and they'll press a button, the same button on a mimic as they walk down the face on every shield. Those button presses are time-stamped and recorded, and then we then correlate the tag position against those time-stamped button presses. And what that allows us to do is if we need to adjust parameters to fine-tune the performance of the system, we can do at that point. So once we get underground, the next thing that happens is you go onto the longwall, and what you need to do then is the system will ask you to register. So as you walk onto the longwall, the one of the mimics will beep, and there'll be a on the display, it'll come up, press OK to register. Now, the reason why you need to do that is if you don't register, if you walk off the longwall, the system won't track you. The system won't do anything. If you don't register and your tag, for some reason, if the battery runs down or if the tag gets damaged, then the system won't track you, and the system won't do anything. In other words, it won't stop operation. What we want to do is, when you walk on the face, you register. If anything happens to your tag, then the system will stop, and we need to investigate it. If you walk off the face, you need to deregister. But And the registration, as I say, is just one button press. Just press the OK button. If you don't register, you'll still be protected. So if there's an advance sequence running, you haven't registered, but you're carrying a tag, then the system will halt when you get into the halt zone. The proximity tags are designed to protect you from any operation that reduces the walkway. So if it's an advance sequence, whether it's shearer initiated, whether it's free running, or whether it's a remote operation, if that operation is going to affect the walkway, then, and you're in that halt zone, then the system will halt. Once you move out of the halt zone, then the system will carry on. The way the parameters are set up and the way the headways, the warning zone and the halt zone, you can set up either, you can have it, as Craig said, at Bailey they have a five shield warning zone and a three shield halt zone. You can actually set it up that if the advance is coming towards you, you get a bigger zone than if it's going away from you. So it has some flexibility in that respect. This is what you see. Craig talked about this on the longwall information system. This is what appears in the head gate and also what appears on the surface. So everybody that has a tag is tracked to show their location, whether the tag has been registered or unregistered, whether the tag is healthy, what the battery life is currently, that type of thing. So we're constantly monitoring the tags on the system. If a tag becomes lost, so if you've registered and the tag then becomes lost, what happens is the system will stop. Now, what you need to do then is you need to, if the system refines the tag, so if, for instance, the tag is lost for somebody walks off the face and doesn't deregister, but then comes back on, if it finds a tag, everything goes back to normal and you can carry on operation. If the tag is not refound, then you can either acknowledge it as a lost tag and go to the head gate and delete that tag from the system. As long as you know that tag is definitely missing from the face. The system also monitors the battery life, and if the battery life is at a low state or a critical state, then the mimics will actually warn the operators that their tag battery needs to be changed. Tag batteries usually last for at least two shifts, so that shouldn't. Generally shouldn't be an issue. Now this is talking about deregistration. So there's two types of, like I said, when you've registered, if you leave the face, you really need to deregister. There's two types of deregistration. One is an automatic deregistration you can set up. So as long as you always pass one mimic, you set up as the deregistration mimic. As you pass it, it'll automatically deregister you. We can also do a manual deregistration where we set up a bank of shield, a bank of mimics, and as you go past, you just press the #2 button and that deregisters you also. And deregistration is at the head gate and tailgate. So if somebody leaves the face and goes into the tailgate, you can also deregistrate at that point. Any questions?
I have a question. You said if the tag gets lost, the system shuts down. Does it shut down the face?
It shuts down the, yes. Oh, the question was if a tag gets lost, does it shut down the face? And the answer is it shuts down the operation of the face. Yes. If you didn't, I heard the question.
Okay, I'm confused why you would need to register when you come on. Since it's automated, it knows you come on. I understand the deregistration, but if you change or leave or lose something, but why would you need to manually register?
The reason for manually registering is if you we wanted to make sure somebody actually did something to let the system know they were on the face. Because if you damage your tag when you're on the face and it disappears, then we want to stop the system and find out why it can't see your tag again. Oh, sorry. We can discuss that some later. Okay.